Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are joined, as we are every month, by Woody Curry, who is the clinical director of the Baltimore Station, a Vietnam veteran, someone who has been working with addiction in our communities for many, 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 many moons, and joins us here in the studio. Good to see you, Woody.
Nice being back, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. You braved the weather to get here?
Yeah, I left before it started icing, and I only live around the corner from here, so
Slip,
it's too bad. I'll walk home, come over, get my car tomorrow.
That, for me, it'll be a long walk home, but see if I can make it there. So, Woody, we were talking, folks, lines are open, by the way, at 410-319-8888. I think Woody's going to lay out some things about addiction and treatment to kind of profoundly rethink why addiction treatment seems to be always such a failure for most people, a constant relapse.
Yeah, I know. the focus on drugs is like minimizing the problem. That's an obvious symptom. That's what everybody sees. And so when you talk about addiction, what comes to mind is people who use drugs. They don't even talk. When you talk about addiction, I don't think people even understand that alcoholism is an addiction.
Really?
Yeah. Alcohol does more damage and causes more problems across the whole spectrum of life than all of the illegal drugs put together.
That's true.
If you put heroin, cocaine, amphetamines, benzos, and
whatever else,
they don't do nowhere near the damage that's done with alcoholism. I mean, with drunken driving and fatalities and spousal abuse and the physiological damage done by alcohol. Alcohol is toxic. The substances that the other drugs are made of, our body produces most of those things themselves. They just don't produce enough of it for you to get high. You know,
right.
So we are hardwired to use drugs. I mean, when we feel good, that's a dopamine. Okay, when we feel energized, that's norepinephrine, you know. When we feel relaxed and calm, that's serotonin. So we are hardwired to use drugs. Nature has its own way of calming you down and straightening things out and relaxing you and things like that. So we are hardwired for drug use. But that's just physiological. But most people look at the drug use as they're talking about physical dependence on the chemical. Now, addiction, that's a bigger picture. That's that six blind men and the elephant thing. The elephant's a lot bigger than the part you got your hands on, you know? And so people go into treatment and stop using drugs. What about the processes that were developed during the drug use or prior to the drug use, the brain neurobiological disorder that led to the drug use in the first place? And the behaviors that's associated with that, that affects the feelings and the behavior and the thinking. So you stop the drug use, you're still an addict. You're just not using drugs. And if you don't rewire your brain, mm-hmm. you're going to do it again. Well, they know we can do that now. Neuroplasticity, we can create other neural networks by practicing different behaviors repeatedly over an extended period of time. And that's why long-term treatment seems to work better than just a detox. You know, the level of chemicals in your blood after detox is just what that means. It's below the toxic level. But are you clean? No.
But it's also, isn't it also in terms, it's also an emotional bond. In some levels, with
feelings, yeah,
with the drug, with everything you were using or taking, and whatever you were stuck with, you detox, but so you feel good because you detox for a month or two, but something comes along and smacks you upside the head.
Well, it's not going to have to smack you upside the head. What you're seeing, and what people don't see, because again, focusing on the drug use, during that period of using drugs and feeling so good, you have become dependent emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically. On the drugs. See? So even without the drugs, that state of dependence is still intact. And whenever, like you say, something comes along, smack you upside the head, nothing has to come along, smack you upside the head. You can just wake up in the morning. You don't have your drugs. You don't feel right. And you're hardwired. Everybody lives out of memory, right, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, whether you're addict or not, you live out of your memory. You do. You can't live out of tomorrow because it hasn't occurred.
Right.
So you live from now back.
Right.
Okay.
And back takes more space than now.
Yeah. We have a longer back than we have
a now.
A now. Right. Okay, so that's the depository of all of our experiences in the past, right? So a negative feeling comes up. What's recorded in the brain was how you dealt with that negative feeling. It's a process called automaticity. It's automatic. It's already there that I feel upset, I feel anxious, I feel insecure. What I did to change that feeling is a program that's already in me, that's already running. So it's an automatic response. You know, it's people always ask me, well, I told him, I say, yeah, but tell the clock stop running. What does what you told him have to do with what's going on with him? He's in most people do things that are more automatic and subconscious than they are consciously living. People don't consciously live. You know, you don't think about tying your shoes, putting your clothes on, going to work. You just get in the car, turn the key on, and drive. You know, we live out of memory automatically. You know, it's conditioned response, so to speak. So the triggers is the fact that you're alive and whatever you encounter, if you're a drug addict, drugs has been a part of your whole life, a major part. Okay, so drugs permeates every aspect of your existence. And so you mean you're just going to stop the drug use? Mm-mm. You'll be back.
So, folks, Woody Curry's in the house. We're talking about addiction, and we're talking about addiction that goes beyond just, as we talked about earlier, about alcoholism, and drinking becomes the largest addiction in America, the most dangerous in America. But why is it so hard not to do it? What is so difficult about our lives and the programs we go through to stay away from what we don't want to be in, or we say we don't want to be in? Why is there so much relapse? What is not working? 410-319-8888. You can talk from your experience. You can talk with just questions and ideas. Talk about people in your family, people around you. But we want to hear from you at 410-319-8888 because, I mean, there has to be a drastic rethinking. I mean, of all of it. Let me say this question. I mean, if when it comes to addiction, I mean, there's so much dangling in front of us in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost set up for addiction.
We're hardwired for it anyway, if it wasn't anything dangling there. People like to be comfortable.
People like to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Well, we like to be comfortable, but humankind didn't always live in these surroundings where you could have that.
I know. I teach that all the time. I said nothing was here. We had to build it and fix it and put it together. And you can't do it if you're high. You don't want to do anything. It's a motivational.
But what is it about the modern condition that leads itself to all the addiction we have? Is it just because is it consumer society that dangles it in front of our face all the time, that we have to have it? I interviewed some folks today that will do a show. You'll hear it next week on the air. On the history of sugar in the world and how sugar was created slavery, modern slavery. Sugar created the modern industrial revolution. Sugar created modern capitalism. Sugar created this consumer world we live in. Sugar was the basis of all the – it also was the basis of our desire for freedom and democracy. But sugar is also, too much of it,
mm-hmm.
is as much of an addiction as alcohol or anything else.
It's instant gratification.
Instant gratification.
Okay, and to build something means delay in gratification. It means practicing some self-discipline, making a commitment, not having the outcome right away, but steadily going at it and working towards something. Okay, that's life. But if I can get my needs met quick, that's the catch. And then we live in a culture where feeling good is what it's about to a lot of people. You look at TV and everything. I mean, I just happen to look at things and see stuff that, you know, they advertise. You know who the major advertisers is in TV? Drugs.
Alcohol.
drugs and drugs.
I mean, pharmaceutical drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
You know, we live in a society where...
It used to be cigarettes, too. We just banned those.
Yeah, the nicotine. But we live in a society where there's a pill that'll make you feel better regardless.
Right.
I mean, I think they invent the drug and then try to figure out some kind of
disorder,
dysfunction to match it. Because a lot of the drugs were just there, and they found out accidentally that it was something that you could treat.
I'm going to do something here, if you don't mind, Woody. I'm going to open the phones a little early. A lot of people are calling. Let's get them on get them on the phone to join us here. 410-319-8888. Woody Curry, clinical director at the Baltimore Station, joins us here every month. We talk about different aspects of addiction in our society, and he always has an interesting take that we have to ponder and wrestle with, and maybe sometimes it gets him in some hot water, which we like to do, too, sometimes. 410-319-8888. Well, we won't do it today. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Kelly.
I'm a first-time caller.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. That this topic is very timely. I have a grandmother who is almost 80, and she's an alcoholic and has been drinking for a long time. And I think that is so this conversation, it makes me wonder the role of family in addiction, and then can family members set up the person who is trying to recover for failure? When you say living out of memory, the person who's trying to recover is trying very hard and doing what he or she may do, but the family members around may not want that person to forget or to recover. What is your opinion about that?
You touched on two things, which is really two manifestations of one thing. It's called enabling, and there are different dynamics. We love our family. We don't want to hurt them. Okay. Recovering from addiction is a painful process. As human beings, we have a natural aversion to pain, ours or anybody else's. So we want to make them comfortable. And if people are made comfortable, they're not going to stop. Tackling addiction means that you're going to have to go through some very unpleasant feelings. You're going to have to be honest about some very unpleasant things about your behavior, your lifestyle, your attitude. And most people don't want to do that. So dealing with addiction, you have to be tough. You know, and most people don't. I get calls all the time from, let me give you a better example, from people that call me, and they are not addicted. They are relatives of an addict. And my son's stealing, and he's getting everything out, and I don't know what to do. I said, put him out. I can't do that. I said, why? Because he's my son. I said, but that's the only way he's going to stop. When life becomes unbearable, when his addiction becomes bearable, as long as somebody's helping him to live with it, he's not going to stop.
But what Kelly is asking, though, I think, because I think a lot of people and who grew up like this, a lot of us did, that you have a parent who's an alcoholic, somebody who you care about deeply, and when you're an alcoholic, you end up being, and I'm sure, Kelly, this is in your world, too, the person ends up being a Jekyll and Hyde, the sweetest, lovely, maybe most brilliant human being you know, and then...
Oh, it could work the other way. You could be a Hyde.
No, but what I'm saying, but then they have all these drinks, and by the time they get through their fifth during the day, by the time the evening arrives, they're a Hyde. I mean, they're Jekyll. They're the ones who, they come after you. They become evil and mean spirit. You know what I'm saying? So, but you love them, and you want to put your hands around them and hold them to keep them from doing that. But the question is, what do? You can't put your mother out.
Why can't you?
How can you put your mother out, man? When you put your
don't ask me, Mark. Look, didn't I say tough?
Yeah, you did.
That's exactly what I meant.
So what would you say
I'm
to Kelly?
One of those
what
counselors
do?
That most people don't like deal with.
How does she deal with an 80-year-old mother who she knows is an alcoholic?
I really don't think that there is a way unless the consequences of the alcoholism. It's like the show Intervention. Family members have to confront with some professional help and intervention and let grandma know exactly what they actually feel and experience as a result of her drinking.
So you think interventions are important?
Exactly.
Familial interventions are important.
I've been doing it for years. I mean, not now, I don't, not that much. I do it confrontationally in when dealing with individual clients. But at a time when I worked at the health department some years ago, I worked with juveniles, and one of the things with the juvenile's parents were drinking, one of the things that I used to do was to set up an intervention in my office to bring the parents in along with the kid and give the kid the opportunity to express just how he felt and what he saw as far as their drinking was concerned.
So, Kelly, you hung up, but if you're listening, I mean, I think the question is interventions. Maybe we'll talk a bit about how people can even get to that point, where they go. I mean, people don't even know where to go for those kind of things because there's so many shysters in this world.
Well, any professional should notice. I'm saying every professional should notice. There's a natural affinity. People don't like doing things that are unpleasant.
No, none of us do.
I know. That's my point. So I try to teach my staff and other counselors, look, become friendly with pain and fear and suffering. Because those are your allies, believe me. Those things are primary motivators. All this love, I don't even know what you're talking about. But pain is a primary motivator. Fear is a primary motivator. Most people, the things are buried so deep that they aren't even in touch with those things. But civilization came up as a result of fear. We need to get together because if we don't, this other tribe's going to come and you know what I'm saying? But see, people don't want to look at that. Pain and fear are my tools. They don't scare me, I guess, because I've been in so many situations where that was what was going on. War, the streets, the drugs, so what? I'm used to it. And I know what it does. It causes people to change.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's changed if they feel okay. You change when things aren't working. So I create a crisis for that individual. And it can be done through intervention, through confrontation, or...
Folks, 410-319-8888. Woody Curry's in the house. We're talking about addiction. Of course, he's clinical director of the Baltimore Station. Ron, you're on the air.
Folks, 410-319-8888.
Yes, hi. Hi, Ron. Can you turn down your radio?
Hi. Dr. Curry, how are you?
Okay. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Yeah, listen, I was listening to your program, and everything you're saying is 100% correct. I've been clean for like 11 years. And what I have found is I practiced learned behavior from the age of somewhere around 5. And as a result of that, I got addicted, started smoking and drinking and doing any destructive thing you can ever imagine. However, during the course of that, my mother put me out, much like you said, and took me to a homeless shelter where I stayed for 2 years. Went to college, obtained my BS degree in criminal justice, and I'm now working on my master's. How did that happen? Everything you said is correct. Change your thinking, change your behavior, and change your outlook on life. Without those things in place, you will never, ever, ever stop. Tough love is 100% correct. If you enable people, they'll never be the person that you aspire them to be, nor will they want to be, because they just don't know how. So I would like some information on you. And like to touch base with you because my master's degree is in human services because I kind of like you feel compelled to help people who've been where I am. But I'm telling you, if you pray and if you practice a new belief, new behavior, and change your thinking, anything is possible.
Woody?
Sounds like he's on the money. It's nice to, well, I know that. I mean, you know, getting people around me to see that is difficult. Because everybody wants people to behave themselves. And they think that, well, if he just stops using drugs, he will. I'm saying you are in denial as much as the addict is. The people who don't see what addiction really is are just as much in denial as the person who's addicted. So they inadvertently enable the addict. You know, I have people all the time that want to come to the program. And by 30 or 60 days, the guy's not using drugs anymore. So they figure, well, now he needs a job. I said, he's not in here because he's unemployed. He had a job. He's had numerous jobs. You know, you're going to give him a job, he's going to get some money, and he's going to get high. Then when it happens, they ask me, how'd you know? Mister, I've been doing this for 35 years. If I don't know it by now, then I won't ever know it. I can look at it and see. I've seen it. I lived it, you know. So that's how I know. I'm trained. I'm educated. I have a degree in this. I have a license to do this. So that's how I know. Same way anybody else knows anything else.
Ron, thanks for your call. Congratulations on being 11 years clean. That is a feat in itself. And we're going to get into why this is such a feat in a moment. 410-319-8888. Lolita, you're on the air. Hi, Lolita, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, can you give us some practical tools that will help for behavioral modification? I work in a prison currently with men in the BCDC, the ACT program. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
And I'm finding that a lot of the guys do have dual diagnoses of mental illness along with their addiction. But I've been trying to capture their attention with, you know, talking to them about the way they think. And it's been a real challenge because I know some people are stuck somewhere at the age of 5, 12, or whatever in their consciousness. And it's really hard for them to move forward. And the herd mentality amongst our brothers is, I don't know what to say, it's kind of like paralyzing. The lack of wanting to think for themselves and just follow along with somebody else's opinion and what they have to say about a subject matter. So are there any practical tools that you could, you know, give the newly addict person out here of what they can do to help change their way of thinking and move from instant gratification to, you know, I got a dream and I got a hope and I want to actually do something different this time? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, Lisa, thanks so much for calling.
You can't talk anybody out of using drugs because drugs have a reward. The reward is the feeling that they get from drugs. You don't get a feeling reward from delaying gratification. You don't get a feeling reward from practicing self-discipline. You don't get a feeling reward from making commitments and sticking to them. You don't get a feeling reward from leaving what you're familiar with and stepping out into unfamiliar territory. All of those situations create anxiety, okay? And anxiety is treated by using drug use, okay? You have to wait until there's an opportune time, usually at a crisis situation, and people in jail in crisis. I mean, some are and some aren't. That's a broad question you ask. You talk about this five-year-old thing. When a person starts using drugs, they don't develop normally. They avoid pain and challenges and problems in life. Why should I deal with this problem when I can go and get high and not feel the stressful effects of the problem? So when the drugs are gone, what you have is a person that's, like you said, stuck. No. You have a person that only developed up to the point where they started using drugs. So now you have all of these life skills to learn. Life and learning are one and the same. If you're using drugs, what you learn how to do is exist as a drug user. You don't learn how to go to work and pay bills and form relationships and make nurturing relationships and enter into engagements and marriages. You don't learn how to do that stuff. You get into those situations for the same reason you use drugs. You get into them because they make you feel good, okay? Not for the other reasons, because anything in life requires some work, and being comfortable is a result, not a prerequisite. So it's a long process of relearning, or how do you rehabilitate someone who's never been habilitated? You can't do it. We have a long-term program, and most of the program is about learning those things that you didn't learn during the time that you were doing drugs. And what you didn't learn how to do was to get along with other people, because drug use is basically self-serving. and selfish. So there's a lot of people in the world that you're going to need to interact with. So you're going to have to learn how to get along with other people. You're going to have to form some nurturing relationships. You're going to have to learn how to work as a team. You know, all of those things need to be learned. That's why you have such a high rate of relapse. You got someone that stopped using drugs, and now he's back facing those problems that he never confronted all of his life. That's why his life is such a shambles. He doesn't know how to deal with them.
So what do you do? I mean, so what's the response to that?
I just told you. We have a – I'm not promoting.
No. But what I mean is like she's working in prison with these men.
Yeah. I got drug court clients, people that come out of prison. I got them on both levels, incarcerated veterans and people from drug court. And we treat all people the same way. The veterans, the drug court clients, the incarcerated vets, they all have to learn how to live clean and sober. And learning how to live, the only way you learn how to live is by living and following directions. Something that most people don't do.
And we have to go break. When we come back, we'll go right to Curtis. This is the next caller up at 410-319-8888. But also to explore this even in more depth, this question that you was raised by Lolita that you raised to me on the phone earlier today when we spoke, which is the arrested development.
That's what I was addressing.
Right.
Yeah, the drug use arrested that person.
And so that arrested development, I mean, where you see so much immature behavior by grown men or women.
Chronologically. And physically grown.
Right.
Emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually, they're still totally dependent on someone. Kids are dependent on parents. Addicts learn to depend on other people, places, and things for their own well-being. So that hasn't even changed.
I'm talking with Woody Curry, clinical director of the Baltimore Station. 410-319-8888 is the number. We're going to come back to your calls, Curtis. We're going to come right to your call when we come back from this break. On the way, I want to remind you what am I reminding you here? This week's issue of the City Paper. Lee Gardner checks in with Globe Poster Company and the efforts to save its trove of cultural history. In Mobtown Beat, Van Smith reports on the sentencing of a Black guerrilla family gang leader. And in Eat Me, Henry Hong sets out on the road to the Chili Bowl. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Woody Curry. I'm Mark Steiner. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are joined here by Woody Curry, as we are every month. He is the clinical director of the Baltimore Station. I want to remind you on our way to talk with Woody that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And we're talking about addiction, the issues facing addiction in our society, but more importantly, we're going to start talking as we have been about what is lacking in our addiction programs and why there's so much relapse and what we're finding out about a much deeper way to treat it, which actually could be in some ways, well, not just more effective, might also be more expensive, but we'll talk about that. 410-319-8888. Curtis, you're on the air. Hi, Curtis, you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I really don't have a solution to what we could do, you know, to help folk, you know, stop from relapsing. But I personally, I just want to share with you that I started out, back in the 70s, just smoking pot with my friends and, you know, drinking a little bit of wine. You know, I just never thought anything would come, you know, I never thought I would become a junkie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then as I, you know, got a little older and I was introduced to different types of drugs, and I always was aware as a kid that, you know, you don't want to be a junkie. You don't want to be a junkie. You don't want to be standing on the corner, you know, trying to get high every day. And I just thought I could handle it. I thought I was one of the ones who could handle it. I thought I could, you know, do this and just leave it alone. But needless to say, I got hooked on heroin. You know, I was hooked on it for years, and I've been in all kinds of treatment centers, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the last time I was in, I got so fed up with myself that I tried to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me in a place, I believe it was called Changing Point, out in White Marsh. It's a place in Maryland. or not Whitewash, I meant to say Ellicott City, and that was my last run. You know, because I was scared. I was really scared. You know, I was scared to associate with any of my friends or anything. I was just scared. You know, so what I did was when I got out the last time, I got hooked up with a place called Narcotics Anonymous, and I did everything those folks told me to do. I mean, everything. I attended meeting after meeting. I got involved, you know, with the secretary of meeting and everything, and I went to step meetings and all. You know, and it sort of it gave me an opportunity to take self inventory and see exactly why I was like I was, you know, and I can't say it was peer pressure because, like the brother was saying, you know, you want stuff to feel good, you know, that's why I got married because I like sex, you know, that's why I like that euphoric feeling, you know, but then it got to a point where all I wanted to do was just feel normal, so I had to go out here and use just to feel normal. But only by the grace of God, you know, I managed to live through it, you know, and I'm working in the church now, and you know, things are getting better. You know, I still have some issues about my character, but I'm getting better. I'm in a process of getting better, you know. And it's not an easy road, man. It's, mm-hmm. it's very, very hard, very difficult, and you know, it's like my last days. I burned all my bridges. I didn't have nowhere to go, you know, and. It's just a horrible thing. It's just a horrible experience that I wouldn't wish it on anybody. You know, it's like a living hell. You know, and I often hear, you know, preachers say, or a particular preacher, in fact, the one church that I belong to, he said, well, why in the world would you, you know, experience hell right here on earth, put yourself through hell, I meant to say, and then end up dying and going to hell. You know, it's like you're losing all the way around. Whereas, if you change the way you think, by renewing your mind, you know, and then you know, forming a relationship, of course, me being a Christian, I'm gonna say Jesus Christ, if that's all right. You know, the way we believe, you know, you'll reap the abundant life that's promised, and then you can, you know, also, you know, end up with the Lord when you do expire. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, I just think and praise God that I'm all Southern and I'm doing pretty good these days. You know, so that's all I got to say.
Curtis, thanks you for being so open with us this evening and joining us. Woody?
Good, Curtis. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, one thing I learned, Mark, in Vietnam and in drug treatment and prisons and everything is that you don't have to die to go to hell.
That's for sure.
You know, you can create your own right here in the here and now. You know,
or be thrown into it by somebody else.
Well, yeah, you know, you're going to experience it anyway right here and here and there if you open your eyes. You know, it's not a destination. It's where you find yourself sometimes. And if I tell people all the time, if you're going through hell, keep going.
Don't stop.
Don't stop, yeah. You know, it's a long-term process. You know, really, and people aren't going to understand this, and they'll probably blow my phone off of the hinges tomorrow, and I don't know who else is going to tell me I shouldn't have said it. But in a lot of ways, addiction is, when he talked about the fear and the pain, you remember me mentioning that early? Mm-hmm. And he said that's why he changed. Those things are your allies. I looked at a person's addiction, if they can see it, as an opportunity. It's a wake-up call. It's telling you that you're doing something wrong, that you're making some wrong choices. And your wrong choice, it makes you stop and think before you make any choices. Once you get out of the grips of the addiction, it makes you do a lot of reflection. You know, 12-step programs aren't the only venue where people can practice self-reflection and honesty and things like that. So that's not about addiction. That's just about living your life according to some principles, which exist universally, but they aren't easy.
I've heard you talk before, and this is not to kind of get into putting any particular idea or belief down or not believing in it, because that's mm-hmm. not the spirit of what I'm asking. Mm-hmm. But I've heard you in your relapse prevention lectures you do on Monday nights at the station.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that you have to deal with this addiction inside of you whatever the addiction is, and you can't turn to a man or a woman if that's what you need. You can't turn to a church or synagogue or mosque. You've got to find something deeper. You've got to find something in a different place about yourself.
Well, whatever you turn to is going to reveal something about you. So it's going to be about you anyway. See, we're field dependent. We look for everything we need out in the world. That's why we can't find it. It's in us. Things in the world only trigger or they're a catalyst for self-discovery. You see, you have an appetite or a hunger, and you go and try to find whatever it is in the world that feeds that hunger. The other process is that you find out what it is about you that creates the hunger that you're not helping yourself with. It ain't the trap that killed the rat, it's his love of the cheese. You see, so I got to go in there and get rid of whatever it is that I think I need and learn how to provide that for myself. If I'm lonely and things like that and I think I need companionship, then I have to learn how to be a companion, not go out and use somebody else to be a companion with me. You see, I have to, it's a bilateral relationship, not a unilateral, between the addict and his addiction.
Can you ever deal with addiction and not be addicted to the fact you're an addict?
Wait a minute, I don't understand that.
All right, what I mean is, when somebody has been an addict, an mm-hmm. alcoholic, whatever somebody's been, mm-hmm. and they've no longer are using whatever that stuff that they were using is, that it seems to me that the idea that being an addict itself is a way of life, or even being someone who is addicted but no longer using is a way of life. Do you know what I'm saying?
The lifestyle that comes along with the
right.
drug addiction.
I mean,
that's just a subculture. You know, that's a subculture, which most people don't see. The whole world of drugs and pleasure-seeking behavior and the language and the clothes and the mannerisms and the dress, it's from a sociological perspective. People tend to, birds of a feather flock together, you see. So people tend to gravitate towards people who are like them in understanding, in speech and behavior, in similar experiences, you see. You can relate to someone who's been where you've been. You sort of hang out together. It's, you know, it's that herd thing that Lolita was talking about. People tend to gravitate. There's a degree of security in numbers.
Right.
See, now to get out of that lifestyle means you got to step out on your own into a world that you are totally unfamiliar with, okay, which produces anxiety. Anxiety is a primary experience to lead someone to get high. You see why it takes a lot of self-discipline?
It takes a huge amount of self-discipline, and we live inside of a world that I maintain is a world that sponsors addiction, that mm-hmm. that is, whether it's a consumer addiction to buying things you don't need and spending all your money.
Why do you think we're broke?
Right. To alcohol, to the alcohol and the pharmaceutical drugs and the cigarettes that are pushed in advertising every day.
Mm-hmm. What about the clubs?
Clubs?
What about the conspicuous consumption? What about the clothes? What about the jewelry? What about the I want to be a star? What about, you know?
So when that's what I'm saying. So when you're treating addiction and dealing with addiction, you're dealing with something larger than just the individual.
That's what I started this off with. If the addict's in denial, where did he come from? Where'd he come from? He wasn't beamed down here from the Enterprise. He came out of the very society that don't want to deal with him. You see what I'm saying? He's not in it by himself. You see what I'm saying? We're in denial. Collectively. The addict is just a symptom. Like addiction is a symptom that is something wrong with the addict's thinking.
Right.
The drug addiction, that is a symptom of is something wrong with our thinking, collectively. That life is all about feeling good and getting and using and finding ways and means to get more of whatever turns me on or makes me better than or more comfortable or have more than the next individual. That's what competitiveness and getting mine. Remember a book back a while ago called A Culture of Narcissism?
Yes.
That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. And some people just aren't going to get it. So they're angry. And if I stay angry long enough, I need something to take the anger away so I can't get what I want. So I'll put some chemicals in me and I'll feel better. Even though things don't change, they don't bother me.
Right. I can live in my other world.
You live in the same world. You're just not affected by it.
Right.
I tell the guys that there was a spiritual prophet. I don't want to promote any religion, but he spoke the truth when he said that he was in the world but not of it. That's what you got to learn how to do without chemicals. Chemicals allow you to be in the world but not of it. So the things that plague everybody don't really bother you under the influence.
Right.
So how do you get there without using some chemical? Now, that's where you got to learn how to practice some detachment and not follow the crowd and be all right with yourself. You got to get all right with you.
It's not easy to do.
Well, I didn't say it was easy. I just said that's what you have to do.
Folks, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts? A little pushback with in the evening would be good, too. See what you think. Maybe you don't agree with everything that you heard. And, Toy, you're on the air. Hello? Is it Toy? Is that your name?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
I figured that drugs is a sense of loneliness. And if you look inside yourself, we are running from loneliness, fatigue, and some other things, which is dedicated, because there is a longing for God. And when you cannot find it spiritually, you're not going to find it mentally. So therefore, that leads you into the world. And the world don't have anything to offer you but agony. So therefore, being a person of my nature, I'm not able to read or write, but I have a sense of Islam. I was in it since 1958. I'm 68 years old. And I've been through the cage. I've been through here, been through there. But I found out Minister Farrakhan can take a person, take him into the Nation of Islam, and clean him straight up. And he don't need no direction, because once he understands the fullness of the message to the black man and the Holy Quran, he's going to wake up. He's going to wake up. It's going to take him. You see, so this is what we got to get on to. We must find first ourselves, and ourselves with eyes within God. There's no way around it. There's no purpose set or whatever you want to call it into the world. It's going to straighten us up. And the rest of this job out here, it ain't nothing but a bunch of hoop. You know what I mean? It ain't nothing but a money game. And they know it's a money game. We know it's a money game. See what I'm saying? So y'all have a good day. Stay well. Stay in touch.
Take care. Woody Curry?
What?
Your thoughts?
About what?
You just heard.
I don't have any thoughts about it one way or the other. Each his own. You know, I don't get into all that. You know, I'm not inclined to debate or have a whole lot of opinions about somebody else's belief system. If it works for them, more power to them. That's the best I can say. You know, addiction is not gender specific nor religious specific or race specific or any of those things. It's an equal opportunity to destroy you. So one person's inclination to follow a certain path, that's entirely up to him. If it works for him, more power to him. I'm not going to, you know, dispute, acknowledge. You know, it is what it is, as far as he's concerned.
How do you, before I ask this question about why addiction therapy and counseling just seem to work for so many people, how do you draw a line between people who may use something recreationally and an addict?
When what they're using causes their life to become dysfunctional and them to become dependent on it to the point of physical dependence and their social life, their vocational, their professional, just their life in general, then it's time to take a look at it. But you are you asking me, is there a line that you actually cross? No. If it is, you're in a lot of trouble. That's how most people become addicts, because you don't even know you crossed the line until you don't have any. Then it's too late. See, then it's like locking the barn door after Horson ran off, you know. So the Buddhists have what they call middle path. In other words, and that's not just that. That's the way I see it. That's the way I first experienced with it. But when I look around and listen to what I was taught as a kid, or what I heard as a kid that I didn't do, was everything in moderation. Everything in moderation. Everything. Relationships, money, drugs, everything in moderation. You have to have some boundaries. Okay. I try to have healthy boundaries. I'm not going to let anything get me so caught up in it that I feel the need that I can't live without it. I'm not going to do that. You know, I the world's too big to become dependent on any one thing.
Anyway, we live in a culture of excess, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
That's something to be mindful of.
That's what is ingrained in us. That's the program to put in us. Because when you need to make money to buy things, then the gross national product goes up. You know, everybody's happy. You know, people work hard to get money to buy more stuff. But that's just, you know, there are a lot of people. I think the vast majority of people see things clearly enough. We just don't hear from people who live within their means. That doesn't excite anybody. What draws attention is people who are extremely rich or extremely poor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole bunch of people that understand exactly what I'm saying, and they never even been addicted, that know that you have to have some healthy boundaries in your life, you know. But you don't hear from those people. You know, they don't have, they just go about on a daily basis doing what they need to do. And that's what keeps everything going.
As human beings, you know, when I look at the when I look at the structures of major religions of the planet, mm-hmm. they all are about, on one level or another, mm-hmm. whether you like what they say or not, mm-hmm. setting of boundaries,
mm-hmm.
and that so whether it's addiction or not, humankind, I think, is probably we're probably always prone to excess,
exactly.
of things that feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So there are artificial boundaries, or boundaries is things society or religion, whatever it is, puts around it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can address that.
Mm-hmm.
So you can deal with it.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said to each his own. They all say the same thing. You know, it's according to which one you pick. You look deep into them, like I did, like you said, and you find out that basically they are similar in terms of healthy boundaries, how you treat other people, how you treat yourself, what you do. Don't go to excess. You know, everything in moderation. You know, that's the basic tenet in just about everything. I mean, it's tolerance. That's the whole structure of the universe. Everything in its own orbit, you mm-hmm. see. You know, and that's the principle. That's what makes everything work, when you respect boundaries. I mean, I was talking to a guy today, and this is kind of off the subject, but it's on a large scale. I was showing him a structure of how the universe is, with the inner planets next to the sun, and how these big outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and then the sun. He said, well, why doesn't, supposing something bigger than the Earth came in and hit the Earth? I said, it can't. He said, why? I said, because the gravitational pull of those outer planets keeps it from getting that close. And the gravitational pull of the sun keeps it coming from that direction. And the other planet keeps it from coming in the other direction. And even if something did hit the Earth, it would make a big hole in the Earth. But Jupiter's gravitational pull would prevent the Earth from going too far out of place, because nothing bigger than Jupiter exists besides the sun.
At least around here.
Yeah, and so he could see what I was saying. But that's the law of physics, you know. It's tolerance, you know. We call it gravity, but it's really tolerance. Everything in its own orbit, and everything is connected and is held in place when you stay in place. You know, it's a principle. With something that big, all the way down to something as small as we are as people, you know?
Let's try to get another call before the end of the hour. 410-319-8888. In Paris, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Welcome. We're doing well.
I'm an individual. I never use drugs. But, man, I understand everything that you're talking about. You're talking about some heavy stuff. You know what I mean? sounds like to me like the road less traveled type of thing in a sense, you know? Because what I've found is that, like, I never used drugs, but at the same time, I feel all these things, you know what I mean? Like, I feel afraid sometimes. I feel alone, you know? And I thought to myself, I said, well, maybe that's some of the reasons why people do use drugs, because they feel these ways. And, you know, I feel like, and I feel some anxiety from time to time, but I just go through it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, and like you were talking about earlier, people have like certain codes of conduct that they go by, or they may have like a program or what have you, you know, because, you know, I like work out. I, you know, I practice on my trumpet, things of that nature, you know. And it's just, I think a lot of people don't understand that, like, if they just make it to the next day, you know what I mean? It's going to be all right. You're just taking it like one day at a time. You know, and you're going to feel all kinds of ways, you know, as you're going through your journey in life.
It's true.
But, and I just think, you know, I just think that's one of the main reasons why a lot of people use us, because they don't want to feel lonely. And I just have like some pet peeves and stuff when I feel lonely. I say, well, you know, when you pass away, you're going to be by yourself. You know what I mean? I just come up with little pet peeves.
Or not.
You know? And it seems to help me. Sometimes I was feeling a certain way, and then hours later, I might not be feeling like that anymore. You know, but you just have to wait for it. You know, but a lot of people don't want to wait for it. They just need something. They need, like, immediate gratification. You know what I mean?
Pastor, I think you've kind of hit a lot of what we've been talking about. I'm going to let Woody kind of wrap it up here for the last minute.
Well, he hit right on, but, you know, I have to practice what I preach, and I tell God, because, you know, that me doing what I do puts me in, that sets boundaries, you know, by instructing and teaching and counseling and helping other people. What that does, that makes me have to live what I say. You know what I mean? I can't tell people certain things and then go out and do something opposite. That's called being hypocritical.
That's right.
I can't live like that. I don't like it. That makes me uncomfortable. But I always tell people that feelings aren't facts. You know, emotions. It's a fact that I'm experiencing it, but it's not a fact to anybody else unless I share it. And then that's just me telling other people about it. Loneliness, that's a feeling. The reality is, about how many billion people are there in the world? How can anybody be lonely? Unless they choose to entertain that feeling and close themselves off somewhere. So feelings aren't facts. It's a fact that I feel it, but it's also a fact that I felt a lot of things, and if I hadn't acted on them, then they wouldn't have become a fact. You know, so I can sit through feelings. I can do that real easy.
Woody Curry, it's always good to have you on the show. I mean, always, who knows what pops up when we get on the air together. It's always good to have you here.
Got that right. We just put this together spontaneously. It always comes out good like that.
It does. Yeah. Woody Curry, Clinical Director of Baltimore Station. All the information and about the Baltimore Station will be up on thesteinershow.org website. And Woody, good to see you, brother. Thank you so much for stopping by again.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
We're going to take a short break. I want to remind you, on the way to that break, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Or you can go to the Steiner Show website and click on the MeQ banner and get all the information there as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us as we talk a bit about the President's State of the Union speech. Stay with us.